The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
It's hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Open phones for you at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Feel free to set the agenda. Feel free to change the subject. That's what we do here in this hour of the Bible study. Our guest in this hour is Pastor Mark Femmel. He is pastor at Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights, where, coincidentally, Dr. Mark Laverty is the music director. A man who will be featured in a classical music concert for life this Sunday, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The concert is for the purpose and benefit of the organization Lutherans for Life. And so Dr. Laverty's pastor is with us here today. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I am doing very well today.
You brought some rain with you today. You know, we were hoping for sunshine.
Well, I'm sorry. I'll talk to the big guy upstairs.
So how long has Dr. Laverty been the music director at Zion Maryland Heights?
He's been there, I think, the better part of a decade. I'm a new pastor there right now, and so I haven't even been
so
there
So you're
six
kind
months.
Of the rookie. He's kind of the veteran. Is that what you're telling me?
He shows me the ropes.
I hear he's quite a gifted musician.
He is actually phenomenal. I'm amazed that someone of his talent dedicates so much of his time to doing it for the church. But when you look at the body of Christ, there are great talents in the body of Christ, and he is definitely among them.
So as a person who gets to hear with some regularity his skill, his talent at Zion Maryland Heights, what would you say to somebody who's listening to us who's thinking, well, you know, maybe I'd like to go over there to that Werner Auditorium this Sunday and hear Dr. Mark Laverty? Convince me that I should make the trip.
Well, if you are not a member of Zion in Maryland Heights, you ain't heard nothing yet.
It's that good?
He is very good. He is so good with his music leadership at our congregation that he's got about 9 or 10% of our congregation in the choir. And if you've ever been somebody who has led a choir, try to get people to join up for the choir, that is like herding cats. It is tough. But he, by his tremendous leadership, by his tremendous the pieces that he's able to find, this is not just the rank and file kind of things you just kind of pull out of a catalog. He finds the best of the best, and our choir steps up every time.
The Classical Music Concert for Life to benefit Lutherans for Life is this Sunday, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, at the Werner Auditorium here on the campus of Concordia Seminary. I hear there's a rumor that there's going to be some Bach music in there. You think we can count on that?
Knowing Mark, I wouldn't be surprised. You lay out filet mignon when you've got important things to do and important people there.
The funds raised will also be matched by several St. Louis area Thrivent chapters, so it's just win-win-win. And if you are one of those who loves the music of Bach, loves classical music, come to Concordia Seminary on Sunday, May 23rd, 4 o'clock, Dr. Mark Laverty in concert. All right, let's talk about a couple other things here that are on the table here today. You're a fairly young guy. Are you 30 yet? You're not 30 yet.
I am 30.
Are you really?
Yeah, I've already become that old.
You crossed the big 3-0. Okay. But I'll bet being a young, hip kind of a pastor, you're on Facebook. Are you on Facebook, Pastor?
Actually, I am. I'm on Facebook.
And so, as a pastor, I mean, think about the guys that have gone before you, guys who are closer to retirement instead of in the early part of their career. Guys who, I don't want to say they're old dogs who don't want to learn new tricks. That would be a little bit too critical, I guess. But what would you say to an older pastor? He's got a computer, uses his computer, you know, to do some word processing that you think might be a benefit for being on Facebook.
Well, I'd say, honestly, if you're a pastor, do what you do. If you're a pastor who's, 50 years old, people who are 25 or even 20, you know, their parents are around 50, and they kind of understand that their parents really aren't into Facebook, or some of them are. Now, there's a lady that I know who's in her 80s, and she's on Facebook. But I will say it's not a detriment if you're not on Facebook if you're an older pastor, but it's a tremendous boost. And the reason for that is if you want to talk to your youth group or you want to just catch up with some of the people who may not be as regular in going to church, they are more than welcome to they're more than willing to accept you kind of to be their Facebook friend, which means you have an easy way to connect with them and talk with them and just shoot them messages. If you call somebody, you've got to say, hey, how's it going? You know, how are things going? Have you found a car yet? How's the job? Did you get a promotion? How's that going?
So Facebook could be a kind of an instrument to breaking the ice or making a connection with a delinquent member?
I've got a number of people who are my Facebook friends, which means they're part of the people that I see and I can see what's going on in their life. And they just said, yeah, you know, I've met you twice, you know, Christmas and then on Easter, but I'd love to be your friend. But the benefit of it is, especially if you get friends who are not your rank-and-file members, you see what the people you're trying to reach are thinking about. You know, they're not saying, you know, I wonder how the divine nature of Jesus is going to help me with this speeding ticket. You know, they're just thinking about, you know, a game that's going to come out, or they're thinking about how the Arizona law of immigration law is, you know, going to impact their friends. It's really a neat deal.
Ask the pastor stuff.
You get to survey everything. And, you know, if there's somebody who says just something way wacky off the wall, you can kind of bring some words of wisdom with patience and tact. But you don't have to kind of show up at their house, knock on their door and say, why are you talking about this kind of stuff? You can actually just have a conversation. And it's a really easy way to keep connected with a lot of people.
Since you're on Facebook, I assume that you are in favor of it in some ways. You're certainly not here on the radio condemning it. Would you say that Facebook is a gift from God, or it's just a neutral communications tool, neither holy, neither not holy? Which of those two do you?
Well, I got a friend who says Facebook is of the devil.
Well, there you go. There's another perspective.
I strongly disagree. I think the devil doesn't own anything. He just is really good at breaking good stuff. Facebook is a very good tool, just like the Internet. But like the Internet, everything on the Internet, there's always bad. You know, on Facebook, there's like a jillion games that you can play. Very addicting. There's a bunch of quizzes you can take, and you can just take quiz after quiz after quiz. Like, you know, which celebrity are you most like? What kind of car fits your personality? And most of these things, you know, they're fun, but, you know, 4 minutes after you take the quiz, who cares? But where did that 5 minutes go? And so, you know, there's a lot of things that you can kind of just get kind of sucked into. You can get sucked into reading everybody's information of all your friends, seeing what's going on. And, you know, you could easily lose 2 hours of your time, but you could lose 2 hours of your time, you know, exercising, or losing 2 hours of your time reading or watching TV, you know.
I have a story from Lahore, Pakistan. There's something about me that is grateful that I don't live in Lahore, but that's the name of the city in Pakistan. And the story says a Pakistani court has ordered the government to block Facebook because of a page that encourages users to post images of Islam's prophet Muhammad. The Facebook page declaring this May 20th, Everybody Draw Muhammad Day. May 20th, that's today, right? So today is Everybody Draw Muhammad Day. It was established to protest threats made by a radical Muslim group against the creators of South Park for depicting Muhammad in a bear suit earlier this year. Islam prohibits any images of Muhammad. The information section of the Facebook page says the protest is intended to show extremists that, quote, they can't take away our right to freedom of speech by trying to scare us into silence, unquote. It says it's not meant to slander the average Muslim. In Karachi, Pakistan, about 2,000 female students rallied to support Islam and the Facebook ban. So, Pastor, I'm thinking about when we get done with the Bible study here, going down to my office. It'll be lunchtime, be on my own time. I'm thinking about drawing Muhammad there on the Facebook page. As a Christian pastor, would you encourage me or discourage me from going to Facebook and drawing Muhammad?
My sinner side's always looking for a fight, but that doesn't seem speaking the truth in love. You know, it's just kind of picking a fight, and it honestly is going to bolster some Muslims in their religion, saying, you know, we're being persecuted. You know, that means that they really, that's how bad these sinners are. So I'd hate to be an example in one of their speeches, or I'm not going to call them sermons because that word belongs to Jesus. But, you know, I'm not out looking for a fight. So I wouldn't.
So you wouldn't draw Muhammad?
I wouldn't encourage anybody to draw Muhammad.
Would you, are you saying, Chuck, eat your TV dinner there at lunchtime and don't draw Muhammad? Is that what you're telling me?
I would eat your TV lunch at dinner and read your Bible instead.
Now, if the if you happen to know, if it just happened to be that Pastor Mark Femmel knew somebody who is involved with the administration of Facebook, which is a monster outfit now. It's, you know, it's exploded into a huge enterprise. And you're having lunch with this guy, and he says, you know, we talk internally about whether or not to keep up this Facebook page on Draw Muhammad Day, and the consensus has been, yeah, it's a free speech thing, so we're leaving it up. But what do you think, Pastor Femmel? Now, you have a chance to weigh in to the decision makers who manage Facebook. Would you be inclined to say it is a free speech issue, and I congratulate you for having the intestinal fortitude to do it? Or would you say, you know, I don't think it's a good thing. I think you ought to take that page down. Or do you have another option that you prefer?
Well, I'm a big advocate of freedom, right? I think that comes from Jesus, I know that comes from Jesus, but if I were advising the people on Facebook, I'd say, you know, it doesn't really matter. If Pakistan wants to, boycott you for it, then realize that most of the people in Pakistan, if they even care, they're probably going to raise their eyebrows at another thing that Pakistan is shoving down their people's throat. But from a strictly financial perspective, it's kind of like the Miss USA competitions. There's no such thing as bad publicity for businesses.
That's true. And did you want to elaborate on the Miss USA competition there, comparison?
What was it? Carrie Prejean, they had the question on the homosexual marriage. And then you get, just recently they had a question on one of the possible shoe-ins for a winner, and they asked her about the Arizona immigration law. Yeah, I mean, these questions are intentionally chosen, and these things intentionally happen to make people talk about it, you know, on the radio or in their conversations or emails. And in the end, people are just going to remember, oh, that's right, there was that competition, and let's see what they're going to say next time. And so, yeah, for Facebook, I think they're going to cash in if they keep the page up.
Are you influenced at all by, I'm going to call it the reality, that there is open hostility to Christianity and to Jesus Christ in our culture, in other places in the world, which is allowed to stand under the protection of free speech? Comedy Central, we've talked about this recently. I don't know if you've heard about this or not. Comedy Central has given us the program South Park. And you being a young, hip pastor, you probably are familiar with South Park. I think we could probably correctly describe South Park as a vulgar animated program. Lots of people think it's hilarious. Lots of people are big fans of South Park. And so now Comedy Central is working on a new program called JC. And it's expected that the kind of vulgarity and the kind of satire that's in South Park is going to be involved in the program JC, which puts Jesus Christ in a New York City setting and unfolds from there. Most Christians, thinking Christians, probably lament that kind of a presence, but tolerate it for free speech. Is that Christian then in a position to say, hey, you people in Pakistan, we know what it's like to be on the receiving end of this, but we believe in free speech. And because we believe in free speech, we're in favor of the Draw Muhammad on Facebook Day, May 20th. Does that all follow for you, or do you see it differently?
Well, yeah, it's funny that when anybody picks on the Muslims or anything about Islam, or even with, from the Capitol Hill, you get this almost fear of saying radical Islam. You know, it's be nice to everybody but the Christians. And
exactly.
And, you know, but honestly, blessed are you when you are persecuted and when you are attacked, when people say all sorts of things about you and revile you because of my sake, for so they did to the prophets who were before you. This is nothing new. This is nothing new. And honestly, people ask me about South Park and this JC program. Even if this JC program comes to fruition, honestly, it's just going to give me a lot more ammunition. It's going to give me a lot more illustrations to show, blessed are you that you know better. And there are people out there who say, this is okay. There are Christians out there who are going to say, yeah, I'm going to watch it. But blessed are you that you know better. And let us pray for those who don't, and let us talk to them and have intelligent conversations. Do I think a Christian needs to watch JC to talk to somebody who does watch JC if it comes out? No. You know what it's going to say. You can, and if you're really not sure about it, read the Wikipedia article. Don't give them any more ratings.
Yesterday on our Bible study program in the 10 o'clock hour, we were in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, where it says, to have lawsuits at all with one another is already a defeat for you. Why not rather suffer wrong? Why not rather be defrauded? Now, I guess this is a bit of a round peg in a square hole, but I'm seeing a kind of a connection between that text and what you just said. I think I'm hearing you say that as Christians, we're going to respect people's right to speak. So if they want to speak even hatefully toward us, we'll be defrauded. We'll be wrong. But we will not return that hate to them, because we must love our neighbor. Is there a connection between this text and 1 Corinthians 6 and the position you're advocating today?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is John 13. Love one another as I've loved you. You know, Jesus loved us when we hated him. Jesus loved us when we were nailing the nails into his wrists. Jesus loved us when we were lying, or when we were looking at stuff on the internet or on TV that we shouldn't be looking at. You know, he loved us. And this is essentially Paul calling Christians to say, you know, follow Jesus. Now, you know, will people make fun of us? Absolutely. Will people, you know, make, you know, Christian jokes or even Christian TV shows that, you know, who knows how many years it'll run, even if it becomes a show. But, hey, you know, so be it. Honestly, it's kind of sad because the world doesn't know better.
All right, let's take up a different topic here now on our Ask the Pastor Bible study. Those of you who would want to comment on the Facebook page, Let's All Draw Muhammad Day, which is today, you're welcome to join us. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. There's another story raging in the news these days. It concerns Richard Blumenthal, who I believe is the Attorney General of the state of Connecticut. He is the sort of the heir apparent to the Senate seat vacated by Senator Christopher Dodd, who has announced that he will not be a candidate again. It apparently appeared that Blumenthal was on his way to that Senate seat, and then came a bit of a scandal as to his own personal claims about his military service in Vietnam. Are you up to speed on that story, Pastor? Have you heard about that?
I have.
Now, in the previous hour today, I don't know if you had a chance to hear any of our conversation with Pastor Stephen Tice, but we were talking about the last half of 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and I took a position that as a Christian, as a person who is a member of a church, what I really want most from you, Pastor, if I were to be a member of Zion Maryland Heights, for example, I just want to know what the expectations of membership are. Tell me what you want me to do. And I said to Pastor Tice, can you just summarize that? Tell me what you want me to do. And, well, no, he didn't want to do that. And it goes to how we understand what is expected of us situationally. So that in one situation, something may be acceptable. In another situation, it may not. For example, you probably would like me to attend Holy Communion if I'm a member at Zion Maryland Heights. And if I fail to attend Holy Communion, that'll probably come up on your radar screen at some point. You probably want to talk to me about that. However, if I'm in a nursing home and I cannot come to Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights, then you're not going to question why I'm not at the communion rail because of the situation, right?
Absolutely.
That makes it complicated. Paul's going to talk about this later on in 1 Corinthians because the Corinthians have asked him this question. You know, is it okay to eat meat that has been sacrificed to false gods? Is that okay? And we all wish that Paul would give us a very simple, clear, black and white answer, but no, his answer is fairly complicated. That's coming down the road. The question on the table today for Ask the Pastor is, when is lying lying, and when is it merely misspeaking? These days, we say, no, I didn't lie, I just misspoke. Which apparently lying is wrong, but misspeaking is just a mistake. Have you found this to be as challenging as it seems to have emerged in our culture? Liars aren't liars anymore, Pastor. They're just misspeakers. You know what I'm talking about?
Everyone's trying to cover their tail, and everyone tries to make themselves look better than they are. So when you call them out on a lie, that sounds ugly. But if it's a misspeak, oh, you know, they're human. But when you say something like, during my time in the service, dot, 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 you know, it's like, hold on a second. I mean, that's like me saying, you know, when I was a zoologist, I was in charge of the bears. And someone would say, were you ever a zoologist? Well, no, but I went to the zoo. Now, I know that's a little bit more complicated than Blumenthal, or that's a little more simple than Blumenthal, but whether you sin and whether you lie on purpose or you lie unintentionally, a lie is a lie, you know? It's pretty clear.
The story that I have today comes from West Hartford, Connecticut, from Politico.com, and the story says, a defiant Richard Blumenthal surrounded himself with military veterans Tuesday afternoon and acknowledged he'd, quote, misspoken, unquote, a few times about serving in Vietnam, but insisted he'd done nothing wrong and wouldn't let his service in the Marine Corps reserves of the late 1960s be impugned. The remarkable press conference came after the New York Times reported that the Connecticut Attorney General and Democratic Senate candidate had on more than one occasion said that he had served in Vietnam, although his time in the reserves was in fact spent in Washington and Connecticut. So the candidate went before the microphones. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
I volunteered to join the United States Marine Corps Reserves 40 years ago. I left my job working for Pat Moynihan at the White House. At midnight, I got on a bus. I went to boot camp at Parris Island. You want to know how I got into the United States Marine Corps Reserves? I looked them up in a phone book. No special help, no special privileges. I joined the reserves by picking up the phone and signing up. Unlike many of my peers, I chose to join the military and serve my country. As I joined the United States Marine Corps Reserves, I was stationed at Parris Island, and then I served a 6-year commitment in the reserves. I reached the rank of sergeant, and I was honorably discharged. Now, on a few occasions, I have misspoken about my service, and I regret that, and I take full responsibility. But I will not allow... I will not allow anyone to take a few misplaced words and impugn my record of service to our...
All right, Pastor. Misspeaking or lying?
I can understand if somebody misspeaks one time. But when you misspeak a few times, it's kind of a fruit from a different tree. I appreciate, you know, even if you look at how he says this, he says he regrets and he takes full responsibility. That's the words of repentance. Just, of course, if he says I lied or I changed the truth or I tried, that's career's over.
You're listening to the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. We'll continue on this subject on the other side. Suppose I visited you, Pastor, and tried to influence your ministry and said, you know, when I graduated from Concordia Seminary, I had this perspective. If I lied, Would that be wrong?
Hi, I'm Dale Meyer. Come, visit Concordia Seminary, but don't expect to find all our professors on campus. In these days after Easter, pastors throughout the United States gather in regional conferences. They'll be hearing presentations from professors of Concordia Seminary, presentations to help them provide the best pastoral leadership to their parishioners. It's not only in classrooms. The professors of Concordia Seminary serve the whole church. If it's in the headlines, we'll think about it. If it's a topic of conversation at the water cooler, we'll discuss it. If it's something we need to remember, I'll remind you. Hi, this is Dale Meyer, inviting you to hear the Meyer Minute on KFUO Radio. Weekday mornings and afternoons, I'll bring you fresh commentary from a Christian perspective. The Meyer Minute, addressing today's topics the way God sees it on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
If you read the headline, 14-month-old boy towers over mother, you'd probably think it's from a trashy tabloid. But this one's true. Amanda Moore suffers from osteogenesis imperfecta, commonly known as brittle bone disorder. She's only 3 feet tall. Against the doctor's advice, she didn't abort. Her son, Aiden, didn't inherit the condition. Amanda can no longer stand, so when they're sitting next to each other, the toddler's actually bigger than his mom. Aiden's dad, who's over 6 feet tall, understands the unique challenges his growing family faces. Still, they've not ruled out more children. I have close friends who are experiencing similar circumstances. If you'd like to see a touching video about them, visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Headcount, I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. Southern Baptist churches say membership and Sunday school enrollment declined slightly last year, but baptisms increased after a 4-year decline. The Southern Baptist Convention remains the nation's largest Protestant denomination with more than 16 million members. The Presbyterian Church USA has eliminated 49 more jobs at its headquarters. Presbyterians have been coping with losses in membership and divisions over gay issues. In Karachi, Pakistan, about 2,000 female students have rallied to support their government's ban on Facebook for having a page that encourages users to post images of Muhammad.
We are here to show that we can sacrifice our life for our Prophet Muhammad.
The Facebook page declaring this Everybody Draw Muhammad Day was established to protest threats made by a radical Muslim group against the creators of South Park. I'm Steve Coleman.
Thursday's Essence includes conversation from Becky Shaw of Light of Christ Chinese Mission at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Olivet. We'll also be continuing our series, The Essence of First John, with Nathan Metter, who's pastor at St. John Lutheran Church in Plymouth, Wisconsin. And Dr. Stephanie Van Olt joins us, our psychiatrist friend from St. Mary's Hospital in Centralia. I'm Diane Summers. Join me between 1 and 4 for The Essence of KFUO Radio.
Now that nice spring weather is here, people are on the trail for yard and craft sales. Here's your invitation to join the fun. Maybe pick up a hidden treasure at the General Daniel Bissell House Museum Yard and Craft Fair. The sale will take place from 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon at the Bissell House Museum, 10255 Bell Fountain Road, Saturday and Sunday, June 5th and 6th. It's $25 for exhibit space and admission is free. That's June 5th and 6th. 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. If you'd like to join our conversation, we're talking about the situation with Richard Blumenthal, who claims that he has misspoken and that, yes, he has done nothing wrong. I'm trying to sort that out, and I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to consider various positions on this because we just learned in our 10 o'clock hour conversation today that depending on certain situations, some things can be one way or some things can be another way. So it's probably not productive to just draw a black and white rule and be done with it and condemn or affirm based on that black and white rule. We probably need to explore the circumstances. So we're doing that. We listened to Attorney General Blumenthal before we got to the break here. You said, Pastor, if a person misspeaks, well, you know, maybe that's acceptable. If I were to come to your church, suppose I became a member at Zion Maryland Heights, and I've been there for a year, and there's something that Pastor Femmel is doing that's just really bothers me, just troubles me. I wish you'd change this approach or that practice. And so I make an appointment to try to persuade you that you probably ought to start doing this or stop doing that. And as I attempt to persuade you, I say, well, you know, when I graduated from Concordia Seminary back there in 1975, you know, we were taught this, that, and the other thing. You come to find out later that I actually never went to Concordia Seminary. I didn't graduate from there at all, never been in a classroom at Concordia Seminary. Would you say that I misspoke or that I lied?
Well, that's a pretty clear lie. I mean, you either were here for 4 years and you went on vicarage for one of those 4 years, and you went through the ordination. And
but it was only once, Pastor Femmel. I only made that claim once.
But for you to make that kind of misspeaking, that's intentionally creating a story, a part of your life that didn't exist. That'd be different than something like I'm shaking hands after church and I say, well, Chuck, I haven't seen you around as much. And you say, well, I was here last week, wasn't I? And you weren't here last week, but you were here 2 weeks ago. I mean, that's a bit more innocent than, oh, well, when I went to Concordia Seminary and I continued further doctoral studies and I got my PhD in.
So do
that's
you think
creating an entirely
a sitting
different
attorney
story.
General, an elected public official, makes a claim that he served in Vietnam when he didn't, is that more like the I was here last week or I graduated from Concordia Seminary example?
Well, it's very clearly making up a big back time story of saying, yeah, I went to Concordia Seminary and was with this professor and that professor, and when I was there, I heard Dr. Nagel talk about this. Well, no, that's an intentional lie.
Well, then, what do you do with Mr. Blumenthal's claim, acknowledging that he had misspoken a few times, according to the Political.com story, acknowledging he'd misspoken a few times, which is more than once, by the way, but that he's done nothing wrong? He insists he's done nothing wrong. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, if you were a member of my church, I would say, following Jesus always has a bigger reward than choosing another path, just to go on TV and say, you know, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I take full responsibility for my actions. But to call it a misspeaking, that's to say it's unintentional, just kind of a thing that unaccidentally happened. But if you say it's a mistake, you know, I know the world wouldn't forgive you if you say it's a sin or, you know, I intentionally lied. But call it a mistake. Say it's true that I didn't actually serve over there in Vietnam shooting at stuff and, you know, deactivating mines or whatever. But just wanted people to remember that I too was in the service.
People who listen to this program already know that I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. But there are some things that seem to be fairly obvious even to me. So when somebody says, I served in Vietnam, and then it's revealed that you didn't serve in Vietnam, and then you come along and say, I take full responsibility for having said that I served in Vietnam, but I didn't really serve in Vietnam. But you surround yourself with a bunch of veterans, and you talk about getting on a bus at midnight and being honorably discharged. I'm thinking, you know, you're not taking full responsibility. Actually, what you're doing here is you are reshaping and recrafting the truth here so as to diminish what is actually and really true, and that the claim that I take full responsibility is also false. What do you think?
Maybe after today's show, he'll get on the TV tomorrow and say, I misspoke about misspeaking.
Now you're in a what we call a downward spiral, Pastor. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's take this call from Jim. Hi, Jim. You're on the Bible study.
Hey, Brother Chuck.
Good morning.
Good
Jim,
show.
You got clarity on this question?
No. I wish I did. But I've got a couple of questions that goes along with that.
All right.
I know that there's many hyperboles in the Bible, but right now I cannot think of one. But I know that there I've come across them, but they don't stay in my mind too much. But exaggerated statements are in the Bible also, such as John was baptizing in the River Jordan right there around Galilee, and Matthew says that all Galilee came out to see him. Tiberius, was it Tiberius that sent out a decree to the whole world that everybody would come into their own city and register? Well, he couldn't send it out to the whole world because Rome didn't rule the whole world at that time. But yet it says that. And there are, I've got a list of all the statements like that. There are many statements like that in the Bible, but they are not wrong because at what event, like the 4th of July over in St. Louis, well, you look around and see maybe 100,000 people there and say, well, man, the whole city's out today. You know, well, it's just a, it's just an exaggerated statement. It's not a lie, but, you know, it's just a statement of saying, well, man, there's a lot
right.
of people here. Hey, can I make one more?
Sure.
One more statement. I was in the Marine Corps during the Korean War.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. People asked me, so where were you stationed? I said, well, I went to Marine Boot at Parris Island. Then I went to Cherry Point, my first duty station. I never had to go fight, but I tell people I'm a Korean veteran, so am I lying? No, I'm not lying because I am a Korean veteran because I was in during the war. So maybe that's what this man really meant. I don't know. So I'm going to hang up and listen to your statements about on these other two questions.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jim.
Okay.
Good questions. Pastor?
Those are phenomenal questions. First off, the second, I'm going to go backwards. The second one, I thought as well that if he just kind of came out and said, well, when I said in Vietnam, I meant, you know, during the whole Vietnam War era. That's what I meant. If that's what he meant, and that's what his campaign advisors would have told him, everything would have been cleared up. But he's kind of gone in this different direction. He's kind of gone in this different direction of, well, you know, I was there, you know, though I wasn't, you know, my boots sitting there in Vietnam disabling mines. I was there. I'm a Vietnam guy. You know, I was in Vietnam, and I didn't misspeak. You know. Now, I haven't heard all of his quotes and all of his apologetics. I don't know if I have that much time, but based on his explanation of his quote-unquote misspeaking, that doesn't seem to be what he meant at all. But on the other side, with his hyperboles, I think that's a phenomenal question. With hyperboles, you know, when it says about all the people in Jerusalem and Judea and the surrounding area, they came out to see John baptized. When we look at what we get with John the Baptist in the Bible, we don't hear everything that he did. In fact, when we hear about what he did, it makes it very clear that the Bible intentionally does not record everything John did. He transformed the religious culture in that time because everybody was either out there loving him or out there hating him. It's very possible that the people around the area, that almost everybody, if not everybody, kind of came out, just like people in St. Louis, you've seen the arch. So, but I do agree, there are some hyperboles there, you know, like when Tiberius, you know, the census is sent out to all the world. But when you're looking at hyperbole, that's a literary tool, kind of like a metaphor.
I think we've used the term figure of speech
right.
to describe that.
Right.
And everybody knows, wouldn't you say it's correct to say that when all Jerusalem went out to see John the Baptist, nobody thinks that means that every single person in Jerusalem went out to see John the Baptist. Everybody understands that
right.
to be a figure of speech.
Yeah, and you know, but when you think about it, what they're really doing with this figure of speech is they're showing you how big something is. So if a census goes out to the whole world, if you're a Roman, the only part of the world that really matters to you is the Roman Empire. And if they found more part of the world, they'd always try to conquer it. So, you know, there's more to that, the figure of speeches. But it would be kind of like, I suppose this would kind of be like, you know, Chuck, you saying, well, you know, when I was at the seminary, and someone say, whoa, how long were you at the seminary? And you'd say, how long have you been here? 16 years?
Yeah.
You know, you were at the seminary. I was at the seminary for 16 years. Whoa, 16 years. What did you do there? Well, you know, I was learning at the beginning, but then I started to teach. Really? You started to teach? Yeah. Every weekday I was there teaching for, a couple sessions. Well, what you're really saying is you were here teaching a Bible study, and they had this Ask the Pastor deal. You're teaching. At the beginning, you're kind of learning the ropes, but what you know you're telling, but you know when people hear that, what they're really hearing is you were here for your MDiv, and then you were a professor, and that's, you know, that's not the case. God's called you to something else. But that's what we have going here.
So this question almost is out of context, because what you just described there, that was very well done, by the way.
All my good ideas I get from Jesus.
what you just described there is a skill that husbands learn to use with their wives, and even some wives learn to use with their husbands. Employees use to learn with their employers, and I could go on down the line here. Spinning it is what I think that we sometimes refer to. We say it, and it's not actually false, but we say it in such a way so that it creates in the mind of our hearer an image that we want to create, the assumptions they will make, which will actually be false, but we're going to allow to stand. That's dishonest. So what is the standard, Pastor, for the Christian when it comes to honesty? Jim correctly points out that there is, as he put it, hyperbole or exaggeration in the Bible, and we're not running around condemning the Bible because of those things. But the description you just made that I could use in order to deceive people, that's not acceptable. So what is the standard? And after you've told me what the standard is, I'd like you to apply it to Mr. Blumenthal.
Well, let's tell the truth no matter what. Follow Jesus. Let him deal with the fallout of the truth. If you made a mistake, ask for forgiveness. And if you're doing what's right, you have no, at least in that regard, nothing to ask for forgiveness from. So like with Blumenthal, he should have just referenced that he was in the military. He shouldn't have had to belabor it. He shouldn't try to get extra credibility points and emphasizing his service. He just sort of said, hey, you know, when I was a Marine, .. I mean, when somebody makes claims on their military service as a politician, generally, they're not doing it to say, yay, America. They're saying, I'm a hero. I'm here for you. I'm willing to die for this nation. And, oh, you know, if the nation really wants me to serve as a leader, well, that's what a hero does. But heroes aren't supposed to lie.
So if Mr. Blumenthal had come out on Tuesday and said, it's been reported that I did not serve in Vietnam, and I regret to tell you that those reports are correct, and I lied about that service, I so badly wanted to enter public life and to win public office that I exaggerated my service. It was a lie, and I apologize. I was wrong. And been done with it. Instead of trotting out veterans to stand behind him and giving us a list of all the positive things about his service and then telling us, I will not allow my services, Attorney General, to be impugned. If he'd have just left it at that, do Christians have an obligation to say, well, he's told the truth, and he has apologized, therefore he is exonerated, and I will not hold that lie against him as he pursues higher office? Do Christians have that obligation?
Well, they certainly have an obligation to take it into consideration. If I have a politician who says, you know, even though this will probably lose the campaign for me, I messed up, that shows an incredible quality of character. But You know, it's just like, you know, if you've got somebody, you know, in your family who steals money from you to buy drugs, they come home and they say, you know, I made a mistake, I'm sorry. You know, I just, can you forgive me? The Christian is obligated to forgive. But that doesn't mean that the Christian just pretends it doesn't happen, because if you leave your money out on the dresser, you might actually be leading that person into temptation to steal it again and do drugs. So it's not like it's, you know, completely off the record, never happened. It kind of shows the quality of his moral character, but it certainly should say something if he actually has this kind of public repentance, just kind of saying, hey, you know, I made a mistake, I'm sorry.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Brad, you're on the Bible study.
Hi. In context with what you're saying here, I've always struggled with the statement that Jesus made that this generation shall not pass, because he knew, or at least it seems as though he knew, that the people hearing that statement did not understand it correctly. And therefore, if it feels like, I'm sure it wasn't, but it just doesn't feel completely honest somehow.
And, well, I wish I had a reference for that. I know what you're talking about. Okay.
Matthew 16.
Matthew 16. Oh, thank you, Pastor. That's why you're here. Okay, we'll talk about it. Thanks
thank
for the
you.
Call. Where's the, what, can you read it to us in its context, Pastor?
This comes from Matthew 16. I'm going to start at verse 24. It says, Jesus tells his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his life? Or what shall a man give in return for his life? For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay each person according to what he has done. And then he says, truly I say to you, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. I got to say, hats off to you. This is a high-level Bible question. Most people... Well, that's just a high-level Bible question. What happens right after this is Jesus is transfigured, which means we get to see him in the glory of the Father, standing as he is in his kingdom, coming, you know, beaming full of light, you know, and he's there with his disciples. So three of them that were standing there got to see it. John, later on, gets to see it again when they see Jesus in his kingdom. It's some pretty nifty stuff that's going on here. So, you know, it's not so much misdirecting. I mean, he's just telling the truth. Now, if they didn't understand it, then that's so be it. But I got to say, with the Gospels, almost everything that Jesus says, nobody gets. And it's, you know, in honor of the Pentecost on Sunday, with the Holy Spirit, this stuff makes sense. But without the Holy Spirit, people are just standing around whenever Jesus talks, scratching their head, saying, what did he say? So just because the people didn't understand it doesn't mean he's misspeaking. I mean, he does do what he says. He says, there's some standing here will not taste death until they see me in my kingdom. And
what about the claim that about a generation? I can't remember exactly how he quoted that, but Jesus seemed to suggest that before a generation, the Bible talks about, you know, a generation. The children of Israel wandered around for a generation, which was 40 years, which seems to imply or suggest that Jesus would be back within 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, when he talks about this generation, it's one of these, the Old Testament is written in Hebrew, the New Testament is written in Greek. This word generation, it's kind of like a bloodline in which it's not necessarily the people who are alive right now. Like, we just find that generation. That's one way you can interpret the word. But the other generation is kind of like the kind of people you are. So it's kind of saying there are going to be people who are anti-me, people that hate Jesus, people that hate forgiveness, people that hate God, people that hate all my promises and hate my people. They will still be here until the end. And so it's kind of one of these Greek words that means two things. Kind of like in Spanish, casa could mean house, or if with me at the beginning, it could be my home. And so this is kind of how this word kind of is used. It's got a double meaning.
So to force a 40-year limitation, and so, you know, some we do that now. It's a figure of speech. We talk about, you know, in my generation, and
right.
and we're talking about things that are within proximity to my age. We should not impose a 40-year limit on Jesus' remark there, and then come to the conclusion that, well, he actually lied. I think he lied just about as bad as Richard Blumenthal lied there, because He didn't come back within a generation. As a matter of fact, he's not back yet. So he lied.
Or even piously, if someone comes up to you and says, well, Jesus lied here, or Jesus is wrong, we don't have to say, well, you know, it's complicated. He didn't know everything, you know. We don't even have to do that. Whenever you get one of these questions or somebody stumps you, ask your pastor, because that's why they send us to seminary. That's why they send us to your church. That's why we show up on Sunday, so that way when you're stumped, you've got a place to come. And I guarantee you, if it's a good question, it's got an awesome answer.
You know, as we watch Richard Blumenthal come before the microphones, or we watch Mark Sanford, the governor of South Carolina, he got caught, come before the microphones, or Elliot Spitzer, or, oh my goodness, Rod Blagojevich, come before the microphones, submit themselves to questions, sometimes adopt a kind of intimidating posture like, back off with your questions or back off with your inquiry. That's kind of the way it seems like it's become here recently, and I suppose Christians are confronted with the question of, well, should we back off if the stop sign goes up from the accused or the outed or the revealed person? Hey, back off. I'm not going to allow you to impugn my public service. Should Christians back off?
Well, that's the deal. They're public servants, aren't they?
Well,
and
you know,
if a servant steals the piano out of your front room, they say, hey, stop it. You're not going to go, okay. You say, give me back the piano or I'm going to call the police. You know, they're public servants. When they step out of public life, then they no longer work for us. But as long as they work for us, they are accountable to us.
So then, to turn this coin over, does the Christian have a responsibility to see to it that the truth is revealed about these kinds of people who do these kinds of things? Does the Christian have a responsibility to press institutions like the press or the government to investigate these things fully so that the truth is discovered, regardless of how hurtful it might be to families and people, etc.?
Well, the goal for it is always to lead them to the truth, because when people live in the truth, they are truly living life as they're supposed to, even if that means they have to ask for forgiveness. So to allow Blagojevich, if he's guilty, or allow Blumenthal to kind of get away with this, we're just kind of saying, hey, you know what, as long as you got the money or the charisma, go ahead and lie all you want. And not only is that a disservice to that individual by allowing them to just kind of, you know, muddle in the sin, but it's kind of setting a precedent for everybody, saying, hey, lie, do whatever you want, as long as you're smart enough and smooth enough and you got your explanation backed up, then just do it. I tell you, you know, you just kept listing people, and I was about to say, at some point you got to say, et cetera, otherwise you're never going to stop talking.
Yeah.
Listing to these people that have let us down. It really makes you yearn for when our King shows up and kind of cleans house, and it's just him, when it's just Jesus taking care of us. But as a Christian, you know, we already got that. You know, no matter what anybody does as our public servants, no matter what they take from us or do to us or make us endure, our King is in heaven, and he deals with us not only in the end, but even right now.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor.
My privilege.
God's blessings to you. Thank you for spending some time with us here on Ask the Pastor.
My privilege. Thanks for having me.
Our next conversation in the text of 1 Corinthians chapter 7 will be with Pastor Kevin Parviz, pastor at Kyavi Shalom in Dogtown, and our Ask the Pastor guest next time will be Pastor Alan Shade, pastor at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the questions.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.